It's a big week when RHAP is on the road in Chicago. Check out my live show from Chicago. That's going to be up on Thursday, Wednesday night. Shannon Gus is going to be live with you with Kelly Wentworth after Survivor. And we preview the Dondi finale with Deal or No Deal Island host Joe Manganiello, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Before we get into this week's B&B, we're here to talk about another choice piece of programming here on reality TV Wrap Ups. Liana, we might be bidding farewell and have bid farewell to Survivor for quite some time, but that does not mean CBS reality is barren. No, no, no. Love Island is coming. It's back for season two in the U.S. This unique dating show gives you the power to vote for your faves all season long. This show, which involves a bunch of sexy islanders looking for love, will air on CBS starting Monday, August 24th, and will air every night of the week, except for Wednesdays, because even the Lord takes a day off.
That's right. And I believe it was Wednesday, especially when the Lord made Love Island or Love Villa in Las Vegas.
Yeah, that's the other thing as well, is obviously there are a lot of new protocols being put in place. One of them is that it's going to take place in Vegas, which honestly makes so much sense. And I'm like, why did it not take place there before?
I know. Like, was it absolutely necessary that you were on an island? But I don't know. They like converted a nightclub and stuff. I think it's going to be so fun. And that's the thing, is that even though they're not on an island, don't worry, because season two will have a new level of chaotic energy with the introduction of, again, Casa Amora.
Amore eel. They're putting an eel in the pool.
That is definitely what we want to see on Love Island. Not that kind of eel, though. Casa Amora Eel is a new twist that will test the islanders' connections like never before.
And so we got two fantastic people in the roster to cover this, returning from their season one coverage, Kirsten McGinnis and Brian Scally. They're going to be coming to you every Wednesday. They will not be resting, unlike Love Island, and Saturday, to give you recaps that are going to take the show even less seriously than it does in itself. And which, if you even watched it, you know that's a pretty low bar. They're going to get into everything silly and salacious and everything in between about the recouplings, the uncouplings, and eventually who is going to win each other's hearts and a cash prize at the end of it.
Look, Mike, you and I both know that you need a silly recap to talk about any reality television show, and Kirsten and Scally, you're definitely going to bring it.
All right, so let's go from Love Island to another island in the South Pacific as we get into the B&B for this week. Take it away, Wolf from America.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P B&B. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for the finale, Survivor Borneo, Survivor Pulau Tiga, whatever the heck you want to call it. We're here talking about one of the most watched episodes, the most watched episode in Survivor history. We're talking about it 20 plus years later. We have assembled three people who have caked themselves in mud and walked through a beaded curtain, slapped by palm fronds, and ready to stand on a pole and talk about games for hours on end. Of course, I am Mike Bloom. I'm joined, as always, by someone who I would never vote for in a Final Four tiebreaker, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
Oh, that's so sweet of you. And I would never walk over burning coals for you, Mike.
Remember Final Four tiebreakers? Remember Final Four votes?
Remember when that was a thing and it wasn't just always fire? Huh.
Oh, my God. That's going to be a lot of that today. Spoiler alert. It's going to be a lot of member berries coming out. But we are so happy to welcome this guy back to the B&B. He is sweeter than a wafting orange brought by Jeff Probst on plates. You remember him from The Amazing Race two times over, as well as the Psycho Babble podcast. Corey Cool, welcome back to the B&B. How's it going?
I'm doing well. This is the first time I've ever been to a B&B twice.
Oh, I feel so so good that we were able to make it a two-time experience.
Yeah, your Yelp reviews really sold it.
I love Corey.
I'm checking in again.
Corey is the lightning of B&Bs. He never strikes twice at one location.
Exactly.
So this is it. After 13 weeks of going in and out of time, here we are, sort of back where we began. We started, of course, this rewatch journey shortly after the Survivor 40 finale with the first ever episode of Survivor. We are now concluding with the Survivor 1 finale, considered not one of the biggest episodes in Survivor, but one of the biggest episodes in reality television, let alone television history, when it came on August 23rd, 2000. So we all watched this episode. We have a lot of stuff to get into, but Corey, firsthand, I would love to ask, reinvestigating this episode 20 years later, especially with 20 years of Survivor behind us, what were your impressions?
This, I mean, I was telling you guys a little bit before we started recording, but it was so refreshing to kind of see old school Survivor being played and to see how much downtime there was and how relaxed everyone seemed to be, given it was like a Final Four moment and they're all just hanging out in hammocks doing their own thing. It was kind of refreshing. I enjoyed the walk down memory lane.
It definitely felt like you could breathe, because the Survivor finales nowadays, especially because there's what, like, you know, you have to get through six people.
Yep.
To get to the finals, it just feels jam packed and there's so much going on. Whereas here it was like, look, we're going to have a few comps, some simple comps, and we're going to have a lot of time to just experience these people. And I think part of it was also, this is the first time it's happening. And so you want to take the moment to be like, oh, I'm covered in bug bites. Like, this was so hard. And so you have those experiences as well that I think are really cool to see. But I can understand why that would be repetitive in like a current season of Survivor.
Yeah, but I think that this is surprisingly, I don't know, in my opinion, a bit action-packed, where to your point, we go through like four rounds of eliminations now in finales. But I almost feel like a lot of these finales don't necessarily have like something exciting happening in each round. So I guess you can sort of make up for the fact that you're going through four by being like, well, two of them are really game changing. And so that's why it's a good finale. But here between, you know, the final four obviously has the first ever tie and Kelly turning on Sue. The final three has, you know, Richard Hatch making one of the biggest and initial strategic moves in the show's history, coupled with a fan favorite in Rudy literally falling. And then the first ever final tribal council where, you know, words were exchanged, many different words were exchanged, and the first ever winner was crowned with Jeff Probst sounding like he was delivering, you know, the news that someone's grandma had died with just how serious he was. So it feels like you guys are talking about, like there was certainly room to breathe here. The entire first segment, right, was like them being like, wow, I lost a lot of weight, or I'm all bitten up by bugs. But there was so much intrigue leading up to it and within the episode itself, because this really had gone down to the nitty-gritty. These were the four people who had formed this alliance, and despite Kelly wavering so much, she was sort of like stuck with them. So, and she kept winning out, which also helped these people pick at one another. So I just find it's, especially nowadays, such an enthralling episode to go back and look at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the other things that I appreciated about this was the dramatic moments weren't so overly dramatic that they were just shoved in your face. Like, even when Richard Hatch steps down, I was like, where's the incredibly swelling music and like editing, you know, quick chops and all that stuff that would probably be happening? And that almost made me appreciate it so much more. It's like, oh my gosh, you're kind of experiencing it with the people that are out there on the island. And so that was, it was just nice to see.
Even with Jeff just like sitting on a log next to Richard in that final immunity challenge seemed so like nothing they would even come close to doing these days.
Corey, did you watch the finale back when it aired in 2000? Do you have memories of that night?
Listen, I did watch it. The local newspaper came and filmed my family because we had a big Survivor viewing party, and I pulled it up. I found my aunt sent me the news article, so I've got a picture of it in our text messages. But yeah, we had like a party. We each had torches that we snuffed because we had all had picked who we wanted to win. And so when our person got eliminated, we went outside and snuffed our own torches. Listen, it was wild when I was 15.
That's amazing. I love that so much.
Yeah.
Wait, so who was your person then?
I went with Rudy. So we did like a raffle and everybody picked, I think once it was down to the final five. And I liked Rudy, I guess, when I was 20 years ago.
I mean, you and like, you know, we didn't include the reunion in this, but if you watch the reunion afterwards, Brian Gummel gives out many polls that are done over the course of it. And I think one of the polls was like, who were you rooting for to win? and it was like 45% Rudy, which is like a pretty outstanding amount. So you were definitely not alone, especially once the Pagongs left. They're like, all right, I guess we'll go with Rudy. Rudy right. seems to be the most savory option at this point.
Right. And it was surely just because, yeah, I liked him as a player. And it's like you hadn't even thought about the strategy aspect of it as the fact that like nobody probably would have won sitting next to him in the end. So probably none of them wanted to even take him to the final two.
Just so baffling to think about. like, oh, yes, because like when would that ever fly in modern Survivor? You know, again, like just comparing everything. I think it's so cool to see where the show was and to just re-experience that feeling.
Yeah, this final tribal council, especially, right? Because, I mean, again, look how far we've come where we have literally broken down the final tribal council into sections, into a rubric by which you're meant to grade the finalists. And here, you know, Jeff sort of does like a bit of a speech coming in being like, you know, hey, if we were voting for the sweetest person, it would probably be Gretchen. If we were voting for the most athletic, like we could all go around. The fact of the matter is Richard and Kelly are sitting there. So deal with it. And that was also sort of like the motto at the time. I remember this is actually a clip we pulled for historians not a long time ago, was all the jurors were talking about the two finalists on their walk to tribal council. And if you remember, Colleen's like, is anyone really rooting for either one of these two people? And so that was Jeff, I think, sort of helping guide them of like, look, I know we don't want to be here exactly. These are not the two we want, but we're going to vote for them.
I don't think Rudy got that message, though, because I love it when Rudy walks up and he was like, I don't have nothing to say to these two. I just want to let everyone know how dumb I feel after the mistake I made yesterday. And then just like F's off. Jeff's like, okay.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah, and that's the thing as well. Again, obviously, that final tribal council has one big thing to call home for. But yeah, it's all the little like moments of characters in there as well. Like Jervis going on an extended monologue in response to the Sue Hawk rant. Like, he just keeps going, Corey. I totally forgot about that.
I liked how long-winded all of the voting speeches were. And I get that we can't really see that a lot in modern Survivor now, especially when it's like a blowout win. But I liked hearing more of their internal monologues for why they were deciding who they were voting for. And obviously, with it being a 3-4 vote, it made more sense to do it that way in this first season. But I kind of wish we got that in some sort of aspect with the more modern seasons as well, just to hear what people's thought process actually is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the whole, like, I don't have any, I think it was Sean who's like, I don't have any questions. I just have comments. Like, oh, this has been here from the very beginning.
Yeah, exactly. And only a couple of them are offensive. So good on you, Dr. Sean.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was the other thing. It was like, because I mean, there are definitely some other moments from Borneo like that would definitely not fly. But that one I completely forgot about.
I remember it. I was just like, how many times is he going to slip this into the finale episode? It's like his favorite catchphrase.
Yeah, which is crazy because apparently it was like Richard's catchphrase, apparently. So like it's not even Dr. Shaw's. And he's like, this is going to be my thing now, which makes it again looks even worse in retrospect. Dr. Sean, what a character, this Dr. Sean.
Oh, my goodness. I think one of the other things, I'm just looking through all my notes of like all the moments, even from the beginning, like the Rudy's Diner segment, for example, that was even giving me flashbacks to like Brad Culpepper or Wendell decorating. And so it was kind of nice to remember, oh, we do have some of these moments in modern Survivor as well. So even though it's, you know, especially in the moment with all the Big Brother nonsense going on, I'm like, I miss this type of reality TV. But there are bits of it that exist in modern Survivor as well.
Yeah, same with just them like burning the camp. I feel like in those early seasons, that was such a moment that was always shown for the final two or final three. And it just reminded me, I'm like, oh my gosh, we don't see that anymore. And same with them like hitting the gong when they were walking into tribal council. Just these like little cute things that I'm like, oh, I completely forgot they used to do that.
Yeah, there's like a really interesting reverence for the players in this final episode of like, you did it. Thank you. We put you through the gauntlet and you survived. Like that's what that whole final three experience was, as weird as it was, where it looked like for a second they were like walking on artificial turf. Which is just the strangest idea, but it was like you truly have connected yourself with the spirits of the island, which, you know, Jeff Probst has said most recently that he does, you know, want to make the show for the contestants as well in terms of the experience. But I feel like that's in a different way than this, which was like, thank you for playing our game, which also speaks to how this being the first season, they knew that the experience was like they could set up all they wanted to, but it was going to be executed by these players at the end of the day. So like everything was in their hands.
Was Jeff bringing out the orange slices like a little league coach also part of making the show for the players?
Exactly. Oh, you guys are so good. Here's some leftover craft services that we have. You won't get it until you step off.
Right. He's so annoyed that Kelly wouldn't even smell the oranges. She's like, I'm good. I know what oranges smell like.
It is crazy, though, because I mean, speaking of something that introduced like a modern day hallmark, I think that's the first time that Jeff offered someone food as a temptation. The child. Now, granted, it wasn't like a step off and you get this orange. It was more so a pleasantry. But who would have thought like that seed got planted? And he's like, how could I weaponize this?
No, he was so incredulous about her not wanting to smell the because he was like, well, you don't know what these oranges smell like. Yeah. They're going to permeate your soul. In what universe has oranges ever permeated anyone's soul?
I was very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I know. It was too visceral for the orange slices.
Yeah, permeate your soul sounds like if Jeff Probst decided, like, after the talk show and the book stuff, to go into, like, sense. That's what the phrase he would use, right? Or, like, he'd be like Matthew McConaughey in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days with the frost yourself. Yes. Like, the slogan for something.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, let's start getting into our games here, because we've got a lot of good stuff. And look, we cannot talk about the final episode of Survivor Borneo without talking about the snakes and rats speech. It is one of the most infamous moments in television history. Sue Hawk let loose. Before we get into our game, Liana, what was it like watching this back from a 2020 lens, considering how famous it is?
It was way longer than I remembered it being, because Mike originally had this game idea and I was like, I don't think it's long enough to make this game work. And then I watched it and I was like, oh no, she goes and goes and goes. And that was one thing that I definitely did not remember. This was so incredibly harsh in the best way possible. Like, it's because, okay, not to make another Big Brother reference, but like someone called old school boring and old school reality TV is not boring. And this is the perfect example of that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was shocked at how long that speech actually went on. I feel like I remember it so clearly, but I do not remember it being as long as it was. And I just was sitting there thinking the whole time, like, I wish I could see a raw, unedited, like one single camera shot of this speech, because Sue wasn't always the best with words and pronunciations. And
oh, well, we get it here with manipulative, right?
Yes, yes. Like I have to imagine that there were stumbles or words that were left out or anything. And I just think it would be so iconic to release like the whole thing in one sitting.
Well, release the Burnett cut.
She must have written it, right?
The story is that, because I believe Sean said that like Sue had practiced it in front of him before doing it. So I would I would imagine she committed it to memory, which is crazy considering that like it was only one day between her getting voted out and then her coming to do this. So like, good on her mind not being one of Rudy's 200 pots of rice that she could like memorize this at the top of her head. And to Corey's point, like seemingly get through, though I would love to see her being like, no. I'm going to start over. Still look shocked. We're back to one, people.
Would have been a little bit less impactful if that had been the case. But
before we move on to more fun and games, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors. And we are back, so let's keep on keeping on. So here's what we're going to do. As infamous as Sue Hawk's speech was, we're going to see if we can make it a little bit better. I have turned her speech into Mad Libs. So I'm going to ask you two for some parts of speech, and we're going to fill in Sue Hawk's surprisingly long final jury speech from beginning to end. And we'll see what Snakes and Rats 2020 looks like. They might not even be snakes and rats.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking, all right, animals. Is there going to be a gap for animals?
All right. So again, we'll go back and forth here. Be however the hell creative you want to be, or at least creative, whatever you want. Again, as to quote Jeff Probst, like, if we were voting for the most creative word, we would choose mongoose. If we were voting for the sweetest word, we'd vote orange. All right, let's start with you, Liana.
Okay.
Give me a noun.
A noun. Body lotion.
Okay.
Start not strong.
Liana, Did you look at the desk and see yes, a body lotion?
It's right here.
The Brett Tamblyn approach will get you everywhere. Corey, give me an adjective.
An adjective. Huge.
Okay. Liana, give me a noun.
Oh, treehouse.
Corey, give me another noun.
Cookie.
Liana, give me a body part.
Ooh, I'm going to go with uvula.
Ooh, and just to clarify, that's the hanging ball in the back of your throat.
Yeah, I wanted to make a WAP reference. But like it's the scientific version.
Wow, so that would be, this would indeed be 2020 Snakes and Rats, yep. Would indeed reference WAP. Corey, give me a noun.
Palm tree.
Okay. Liana, another noun.
Okay. Ice cream scooper.
Okay. Shout out to Eric. Corey, a verb, a verb ending in ing.
Spitting.
Liana, a verb.
A verb? Mm-hmm. Okay. Wipe. Okay.
Corey, another verb.
Hiss.
Okay. Liana, a noun.
A noun. Okay. I'm gonna go with
noun.
Noun. A noun. I'm gonna go with TV antenna.
Okay. Corey, another verb.
Let's go with bark.
Bark. Okay. Liana, a noun.
Squid ink.
Corey, an adjective.
Rough.
Liana, another adjective.
I'm gonna go with sparkly.
Mm-hmm. Corey, one more adjective.
Ugly. Mm-hmm.
And finally, Liana, give me a number.
Ooh, okay. I'm gonna go with 4,369.
Okay.
Greg's number was 9.
So I think you lost.
Oh.
All right. Well, let's get into the first part of the speech here, because as we said, it's a long one, so we'll take an intermission here. And I won't try to do the accent. I have no questions. I just have body lotions. Rich, you're a very openly arrogant, huge human being. Wow, Sue. But I admire your frankness with it. You've worked hard to get where you're at, and you started working hard way before you came to the treehouse. So with my work ethic background, I give that cookie to you. But on the other uvula, your inability to admit your failures without going into a whiny palm tree makes you a bit of an ice cream scooper in life.
Mm.
Kelly, the spitting persona queen. You did get wiped on national television by a city boy that never hissed, let alone been in the woods or TV antenna or barked a boat in his life. You sucked on that game. Anyways, I was your squid ink at the beginning of this, really thinking that you were a true squid ink. I was willing to be sitting there and put you next to me. At the time, you were rougher than me. I'm not a very openly nice person. I'm just sparkly, ugly, and tell you the way it is. To have you sit there next to me and me lose $4,369 just to stomp on somebody like this. Stop down for there.
Oh my gosh. You guys are my squid ink.
Yeah, exactly. I was your squid ink. I thought you were a true squid ink. I guess she turned out to not be squid ink.
Also, I don't think anyone has ever described Sue as sparkly.
No.
But at least she followed up like, I'm sparkly, I'm ugly, and I tell it like it is.
That's right.
Could something be ugly and sparkly?
Of course.
Yeah. I think so.
Definitely.
Like, I'm sure there's clothing items that are sparkly and ugly.
Oh, yeah. I just saw one of those on Real Housewives of Potomac.
See?
I also do we think that when Sue calls Richard an ice cream scooper, is that meant to be a compliment or an insult?
Well, she loves ice cream for sure. So I would think a compliment.
Yeah, I think so, too. Plus, she's pretty complimentary in general relative to Kelly in this speech towards Rich. So also, I don't know if there's some sort of time travel involved here with Eric, as you mentioned. I don't know. Maybe it is a compliment, like you're a fan favorite.
Oh, imagine if Eric, yeah, traveled through time to finally get the win and finally be like, all right, to not embarrass myself, I'm going to go back all the way to the first season and show these people how it's done.
That's right.
I don't know. Maybe there's like a sweet theme here between Rich and Sue, because Sue does admit to Rich that, you know, she'll give him that cookie for being so so good with his work ethic.
If you give Rich a cookie,
that's probably scoops of ice cream.
And I also love that Sue has already pivoted from being a trucker into working at Bath and Body Works by saying, I have no questions. I just have body lotions.
What would be her scent? Cucumber melon, perhaps?
No, or like tapioca.
She can't spell any of those words.
Yeah. Oh my god. Okay, if she did, I know that she recited her speech to Shaw, but if she did write it out, like what percentage of words would have been misspelled? Are we talking like over under 40%?
Yeah, I mean,
I was just saying, doesn't she have like, there was some statistic that I saw that she never once wrote any spelled anyone's name correctly throughout the entire voting process.
I mean, I guess the good news is that only two people's names were referenced in this. But then to that point, that does bring up the idea of like what regular words, like I don't know if beginning, I don't know if she knows how many ends are in that. Sure. She does also say like anyways, she says the phrase you sucked on that game, which also sounds a little lewd unintentionally. So.
Classic ice cream scooper.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, let's move on to the second part, and this is the juicy part of it. Corey, we're gonna start with you. Give me a verb.
Let's go with nuzzle.
Liana, give me a number.
0.005.
Okay, Corey, give me a verb.
A verb, let's go with twist.
Okay. A noun, Liana?
A noun. I will go with ferret.
Nice. Corey, another noun?
Rice.
Okay. Liana, a verb?
How about type?
Corey, give me a member of Survivor production.
Do I know anyone other than Jeff?
You could give just the name of a position in the crew, too.
Yeah, let's say the boom mic holder.
Okay, boom mic holder. Liana, give me a preposition.
A preposition? Like on, over? I just want to make sure I get my parts of speech right. Okay, let's go with... Is across a preposition?
Yep.
Okay. Schoolhouse Rock.
I would have needed clarification as well.
I don't know how to describe a preposition. It's like if you're going in a direction. I guess that's what a preposition means.
Sure. Like under and over and around.
Exactly. All right. Corey, give me a noun.
Taco Bell.
Oh, I forgot. Okay. Yeah. Can we do proper nouns? Is that allowed?
Sure. Why the hell not?
Okay.
All right, Liana, just in time, give me a noun.
Benjamin Franklin.
Okay. Corey, give me a body part.
Big toe.
Big toe. Liana, give me a cause of death.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we're getting morbid.
I didn't realize that we were going to get so intense here. Let's go with... like the Sims stuck in a swimming pool without a ladder.
Okay, without a ladder.
How deep is that pool?
I nothing don't know, but the best drown. For Liana Sims. All right, Corey, give me a liquid.
Lava.
Okay. Liana, give me an animal.
Yes. Musk ox.
Okay. Corey, give me a location.
Well, damn, I should have really saved Taco Bell.
I know, you
Bell.
Say Taco Bell.
It's too late to change. Let's just say a parking lot.
Okay.
The Taco Bell parking lot.
Yeah. It's all within the same area. Liana, give me a noun.
Noun. Okay. How about a coaster?
Okay. And Corey, another noun?
A ninja.
Okay. Liana, give me the name of a family member.
Like a sister, aunt, that kind of thing, or like someone from my specific family.
Yeah, I don't want a name of your specific family member.
Or like Aunt Carol.
Yeah.
That sounds like a Family Feud answer.
Do you need a very specific grandmother? Or can we just go with...
Sure, give me a very specific grandmother.
No, I'm going to go with first cousin twice removed, Becky. Becky, of course, it's always Becky.
Okay. And that is it. I just gotta fill in a couple things right here. Okay. There's a lot of repeating in this last one here.
I'm nervous.
Okay, Corey, one more thing. I just need a noun.
Let's go with a cat.
Okay.
And any old cat will do.
Any old cat.
Whatever.
All right. Here we go. This is when it gets really good. So just to review, Sue has, you know, digged into Richard, or scooped into him, I suppose, for being arrogant and huge. Kelly is the spinning persona queen who got wiped on national television by a guy who never barked a boat. Mm-hmm. They were squid inks. She was rougher than her, and she was willing to lose $4,369 sitting next to her in the end.
What a sacrifice.
Very much so. But as the game went along and the two tribes nuzzled, you lied to me, which showed me the true person that you are. You're very 0.005 faced and manipulative to get where you're at anywhere in life. That's why you twist all the time. So at that point of the game, I decided then to just go out with my alliance to my ferret and just hold my dignity and rice in check and hoping that I had it typed too many of them and play the game just as long as possible. Hang in there as long as possible. But Kelly, go back to a couple times the boom mic holder said to you, what goes across comes across. It's here. You will not get my Taco Bell. My Taco Bell will go to Richard. And I hope that is the one Taco Bell that makes you lose the Benjamin Franklin. If it's not, so be it. I'll shake your big toe and I'll go on from here. But if I were to ever pass you along in life again, and you were laying there, dying of being stuck in a swimming pool without a ladder, I would not give you a drink of lava. I would let the muskox take you and do whatever they want with you, with no ill regrets. I plead to the jury tonight to think a little bit about the parking lot that we have been on. This island is full of pretty much only two things. Coasters and ninjas. And in the end of first cousin twice removed Becky Nature, we have Richard the coaster, who knowingly went after prey, and Kelly, who turned into the ninja that ran around like the ninjas do on this island, trying to run from the coaster. I feel like we owe it to the island's cat that we have learned to come to know, to let it be in the end the way that first cousin twice removed Becky Nature intended it to be. For the coaster to eat the ninja.
Oh my god, that's Survivor season 59. Coasters v ninjas.
I was nervous for it, like it's because it's coaster. I mean, again, not going back to the Big Brother parlance, but it feels very applicable. And I guess ninja could be as well.
I love that speech better than the original.
Only she had given that one. I think it just makes way more sense because I also enjoyed the parking lot that they had been on throughout the course of this season.
I love this idea that, like, now I'm thinking that Sue was like holding a bag of Taco Bell like she was on The Bachelorette and like had only one bag to give and had to figure out which one to give it to.
That Taco Bell line really worked there.
Yeah. You will not get my Taco Bell.
She had like the 12 pack of tacos and she was deciding who to give them to between the two. And surprisingly, the Benjamin Franklins also worked out as well because it's all about the Benjamins, baby.
Exactly. What do we think about how does, you know, someone dying of thirst and leaving them for the buzzers to take care of compared to leaving them stuck treading forever in a swimming pool without a ladder and not giving them a drink of lava. It kind of feels like you're just giving them a different type of death, Liana.
Yeah, right. It's like, how slow versus how fast do you want them? Because really, you're putting them out of their misery if you give them lava. So it's like, I'm not going to save you, but I'm going to help you die faster.
Because it's a big would you rather.
Yeah, really. That's would you push the button?
Yeah. And I do like that the boom mic holder, who knew? He was full of such wisdom. What goes across comes across.
They're very helpful out there.
Which makes me think of Toss Across, that game where you have to throw the beanbags and play tic-tac-toe.
Wait, what is that? Is it like cornhole, but like with a tic-tac-toe board?
Yeah, toss so it's across. Essentially, it's a tic-tac-toe board, and there are like tiles that can flip over. And so you have to throw the beanbag, and it flips over the tile, and you have to try to score three in a row.
Okay, yes. I know what you're talking about, yes. Okay.
I'm actually surprised they didn't do that as an immunity challenge in season one, considering how low the budgets were.
I was going to say.
That would have been too much. They needed something not as skilled as that.
You know, they're still going for the whole tribal thing, too. You know what I mean? And I don't think Toss Across really came from Borneo.
Toss Across for Taco Bell. I'd like that challenge.
I'm trying to think of all the sponsorship deals. It's never been Taco Bell, right? Taco Bell's never sponsored.
I don't think they've ever had a Mexican sponsor. It's always been like that, like to Corey's point, like that more generalized like steakhouse restaurant between that and like Applebee's. There's nothing really, I don't know. I don't think we've had like a special cuisine sponsored.
Well, as someone who's had Taco Bell delivered via Uber Eats, it doesn't travel well. So I can understand why they didn't have Taco Bell flown into Borneo.
You think shipping it across the Pacific Ocean is probably a bad idea?
A hard shell taco with sour cream does not carry well for long distances.
There's actually a reward earlier in the season where Jervis wins one slice of pizza from Pizza Hut. And so I can imagine like one taco from Taco Bell transported via helicopter is not going to keep.
No.
Oh my gosh, that would be so funny. You won one Taco Bell grande burrito.
It's not even supreme.
Can't even.
Yeah, well, that's how you have to negotiate with Jeff, though, right? Like, I'm sure, like, I think even the best negotiators, like your Drew Christie's, could probably have gotten like a Crunchwrap Supreme out of it.
I think anything with any type of crunch is probably a bad idea.
Right.
So yeah, we'd have to go with only soft shell type deals.
Could you just imagine approaching Jeff being like, "All right, I'll give you this fishing equipment for a number 9, extra large."
I would be thinking it. Like, I would be thinking it.
Like, where is my Baja Blast? Oh my gosh.
Well, congratulations to both of you. I think we have significantly gussied up one of the most infamous speeches in television history. Now, I do think that Survivor Coasters versus Ninjas might be a thing, but I do feel like the audience would hate it because it feels like nobody's making moves. Because it's people who do nothing in the game versus people who are barely seen.
Yes.
I was going to say, imagine the boom operators trying to like travel and chase down those ninjas. Like, that's just not going to happen. Oh my gosh. Okay, well, so I have something that I want to talk about, which I did not remember the fact that the Final Four immunity challenge was given in front of the jury.
Oh yeah.
And as soon as it started happening, I was like, oh yes, I completely remember this happening, because I wanted to think, well, I wanted to decide, one, should they bring this back, like this type of challenge? Or two, is there another style or type of challenge that they could do in front of the jury that would actually make a difference? So I loved the fact that this challenge was questions about them. Whereas I feel like, I can't remember when in Amazon, the final three, was that in front of the jury? I know it was at Tribal. Mike, do you remember that?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I feel like that or the Thailand one was in front of the jury.
But oh yeah, the Thailand
brief history of this challenge. So this was done in the first four seasons. It was infamously broken by Vesepia Tauri, because Vesepia Tauri's luxury item during her season was a notebook. So she, knowing this challenge was coming, just wrote down all the details she knew about people and pretty much was able to study up on them and crush this challenge, which obviously led to the infamous Purple Rock stuff. So they got rid of it afterwards, but yeah, I agree with you. I really like this, because I feel like, again, like even 40 seasons in, the toughest part of the Survivor game to really personify is the social game. right, is like showing how people bond with other people. And this is a great way to do it. The only closest we've gotten to it was Chrissy Hoffback going down each jury member and saying, like, I remember this about you. I remember that about you. So maybe that's the closest thing, is like, say a memory about each person.
Didn't she name someone's SAT or ACT scores or something like that?
Yeah, I think it was Cole's ACT score, yeah. I believe.
Ugh, that should have been a question. Because, yeah, I don't know. I feel like remembering random facts about them, like, is that really what I want to see? But I want something that brings more drama out of the jury final 3-4 whatever relationship, Corey, because I feel like, you know, they don't really get to see all that much.
Yeah, I really liked reliving this challenge, and I kind of had forgotten that it was something they used to do. And I completely agree. I like that it shows kind of the interpersonal relationships that people develop on the island. And I also am like, that I would very much be that person who knew every little fact about somebody, which is also probably why I like the challenge. But yeah, I think as strategic as the game is, there is a big part of like creating the genuine relationship. So I enjoyed it.
Could there be something where instead of a challenge in front of the jury, it's like you win the ability to like do speed dating with the jury or something, where you like get to sit, have like 30 seconds with each one to just like chat? I don't know, because like I like that idea again of like jury, you know, player interface without it being like the extortion advantage of like them directly influencing the game. The thing I also really liked about this as well is, like you guys said, I think it really showed a lot in terms of like what these people valued. Just look at Kelly, who granted like ekes out Sue at the end, but did super well compared with, I know that they were grousing on Rudy before dunking on, be like, he's not even going to know anything. He doesn't know what Jervis's job is, but Rudy does not finish in last. That is Richard Hatch by a country mile, to the point where he did not even remember that Jenna Lewis had kids. And she was the one who didn't get her video where they said, you don't have to talk to your kids. So not to say that Richard Hatch was like an uncaring person, but I think it was very clear to him, like, this was business, this was professional. And so I think he regarded them maybe a bit less, like, interestingly than Kelly did. And as a result, you know, Kelly's going to lose 3-4, but I think she gets 3 votes in part because of what she did.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was also really funny when Jeff was still asking questions in the final immunity challenge. And I think he said something about like, what's Rudy's wife's name or something. And Rich was just like, I had no idea. He's your one closest ally. Yeah. You had no idea what his wife's name was.
It's crazy. I wonder, like, do you think it was just that Richard didn't ask Rudy? Do you think like Rudy said it and Richard just forgot about it?
It was so interesting because even Colleen tried to like clock Richard because he said observation was a skill that he brought to the table. And it was interesting to relive that and hear him kind of explain the difference to Colleen about observing people, how they're acting on the island versus observing them and getting to know them personally. Because obviously it was a big separation between the two strategies of each of the two finalists.
Yeah, no, that actually was really interesting. And I thought that Richard did a really great job in the final tribal performance. You know, I mean, clearly he actually had thought about all of the strategy of the game before even coming into it, whereas others did not. But to hear him then be able to articulate that, especially because throughout the whole season, we get very little time at tribal council. And so this was like the opportunity to hear his strategy and to be able to talk about those nuances and the difference of how he approached it, I thought was also just like super fascinating.
Okay, here's my idea for a challenge. And it's a little big brothery, but what you do is, so you have like 7 or I guess 5 at that point, like little mannequins of the jury members. And you have a bunch of plaques in front of you that have like facts on them, like born in New Jersey, has kids named Sabrina and Sadie, etc. And you have to arrange them so like everyone has 3 facts, and then whoever gets it and like whoever gets it first with all the correct answers wins immunity or something.
I like that idea. I think another thing on that same note is from the challenge that we've seen a couple times where Jeff tells a story, and not the Blair Witch Project one, but the one where he tells a story and then you have to go to each of the stations and then collect. Yeah. I think in Second Chances we saw it, where you have to collect like answer the question, collect that token, come back, unwrap it. And if it, you know, you collect six or whatever, it could be like a question. But I love the part that it has to be in front of the jury. So I don't know how the jury would actually watch that. Whereas the pedestal mix matching kind of deal.
What if they were at each of the stations and they would like give away the medallions?
Yeah, no. It's that specific person standing there at their station being like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, they'd be like, what's their kids' names? I don't know. And it's just like, really? You don't know my kids' names?
I haven't shut up about them since day one.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, who knows? Maybe one day we'll never see a challenge like that again.
Or maybe it could be something, again, I don't want to keep going back to Big Brother, but what if they did something along the lines of like that final HOH challenge they did a couple times where like, when asked what her favorite moment in the game was, Sue said, A, when I got to dunk on Sean's dad, or B, when I found tapioca.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, those are crapshooty, maybe in the right way. Like someone petty enough would get upset that they wouldn't know the answer to that, even though it's an opinion, not a fact.
I mean, I definitely think people would score brownie points with me if I felt like one person remembered things about my life or aspects of who I am and another person just gave no craps whatsoever.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. Like, and I think that's why the social game is so important on Survivor. And so if I were on the jury, you know, it's always like, oh, I wouldn't be bitter. I might be a little bitter, especially if they didn't know anything about me.
I don't know how you can't not at least be a little bit bitter, because this is a game you're in 24/7. And so like your feelings are inevitably going to get involved. And I think, you know, it depends. If someone like burns you, maybe you have different shades. But if it's like, I agree with Corey. If someone's like, I don't remember what you do for a living, it's like, well, then what were you paying attention to? And if that's the case, like, what, like, were you even treasuring the time that we spent out here or that we spent together?
I mean, wasn't it too in like Samoa? I think it was. Was it Brett who said something to Mick? Like, can you tell me anything about me? Mm-hmm. Like, in his jury speech, it was something like literally tell me something about myself. And he like didn't know anything.
Yeah, I remember that. I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
I think it was Brett asking Mick.
I think so. Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah. We've seen it a bunch of times. I remember Penny in Thailand was like, hey, you know, what do you know about me? And Brian literally said, like, I know nothing. And then Clay gives this whole laundry list of things. So, yeah, it's been something that's been recurring. It's been understandable sentiment among players of like, did you even get to know me at all?
Maybe that'll be my question. I'm going to bank that in my brain if I ever play.
Imagine doing that during this new Final Tribal Council format. They're like, what does that fit into?
That's a good question. Outplay? No, I don't think so. Definitely not outlast. Outwit, maybe?
I guess. Outwit would sort of become the catch-all. Because I think outplay has become like the twists. And I think outwit is like literally everything else, and then outlast is the final speeches.
Yeah,
you're just like, hey Jeff, I'll kick it off. Okay, so tell me all your favorite things about me.
Tell me what you love about me and why am I your favorite juror is my question.
And then you're like, and then you're like, you go to a little bit of like discourse. Okay, circling back to my question though.
Oh no, yeah, I love the concept of like taking it upon yourself, because you know nobody wants to start out first. Like, don't worry guys, I'll help out.
I'll
start this. No worries. Oh my goodness. Okay, well, speaking of all of the contestants that we got to meet on this season of Survivor, we have the first final rites of passage, which we alluded to at the beginning, where they have to walk through palm fronds where the natives are chanting Sandavar, which means the spirit is around you. They then have to pass the staffs of their fallen comrades. And as Jeff Probst says, as you go, take a moment and reflect on them. So we are going to do the same thing. We are going to take a moment and we are going to reflect on them. So what the Survivor episode does is it plays a video of each of the contestants. And so you guys are going to try to guess what was in that video. So it's going to be true or false. Oh. I'm going to read the description of the video. And these are very, very short clips. So, you know, like 4 or 5 seconds max. And you'll have to tell me true or false. Is that what so-and-so was doing in their video?
I was pretty stunned watching that, because my memory of the rites of passage, and I'm pretty sure they did this from season 2 onwards until it went away, was like, you know, people, I think they took like an excerpt from that person's final words or like the day after video and like set it to a montage of things, I was stunned that, to your point, Leona, it was essentially a GIF of a contestant.
I like to think it was their most memorable moment in the season, which makes some of these hilarious. But anyway, I digress. Okay, so we're just going to go one by one. Corey, we'll start with you. So the first eliminated contestant is, of course, Sonia, which, by the way, they spelled her name wrong on the little tag.
My God,
did Sue
did.
Write
Poor
the name?
Sonia.
I know.
At least Kelly knew her last name.
Yeah, that's true.
They should have just put Christopher on there. That's, I guess, harder to misspell than Sonia.
I mean, to be fair, it's spelled with a J, right? Which is pretty uncommon. But okay, so Corey, this question is for you. Was Sonia playing the ukulele?
True.
That is correct. Yes, that one is true. Probably Aww. Because I don't know how much other footage they had of Sonia to use.
Yeah, otherwise it's gonna be like that, her falling.
Yeah,
that's the only memory of her in my brain ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Leona, going back to our first podcast of this rewatch, I'm surprised that she didn't talk about that on Jon Stewart.
Yeah. So, Corey, we did the first episode of Borneo and I found an interview with Sonia with Jon Stewart from The Daily Show from, you know, like it, right after she got voted out. Yeah, it was hilarious. All right, Mike, this is for you. We're talking BB Anderson. Was BB grimacing and cutting something with a machete?
Oh, okay. I feel like BB worked a lot on the shelter, so I feel like he was grimacing, but probably not cutting something up. So I'm going to say false.
I'm sorry. That one was true. Yes. Now, to be fair, it looks like the machete. I tried to do a stop when he like pulled it back, but it was so zoomed in on his face. Really, all you could see was the grimacing.
That's all that matters with BB.
Yeah, which was such an odd choice. All right, Corey, we're going to go back to you. This was, of course, Stacey Stillman, the next contestant booted. Was she getting her torch snuffed out despite the fact that her torch was already extinguished because of the pouring rain?
False.
That is correct. Yes, she was gulping back.
Was she eating something?
Yes, yeah. It was during
The Bhutan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So she was swallowing the larva at the gross food eating challenge. It's such an incredibly flattering shot of her like gulping back food and then sticking her tongue so far out of her mouth to show that her mouth was
empty.
Does,
yeah, she does like the Gene Simmons, right? Where she like touches the bottom of her chin.
It's very long. Yes.
I mean, she went to Richard Hatch's ice cream shop. Like she put him out of business.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Okay. Ramona Gray, Mike, this is for you. Was she walking around camp in her red dress sarong thing?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me, was she in front of wooden spools like she was in her intro shot? I don't think so. I'm going to say false.
That is correct. So I don't really know how to describe this, but it was a very close up shot of really only her face. She was breathing heavy. Her mouth was open and her face was covered in either water or maybe sweat.
Was she in labor?
I even watched like a 13-minute clip of Ramona's highlights from Borneo to try to figure out where it was from. God. And I think it's when she was goofing around with the tribe in the water and she gets like water spray. It wasn't one for one, but it looked very similar. The shot looked very similar. Okay. Corey, this is for you. This is Dirk Bean. Is he sitting in the thinker pose with a Bible on his lap?
He sure is.
That's right. Yes, he sure
oh,
is.
He had me at Bible.
I knew the Bible was there with him.
Yeah, that was what gave it away. Yes, he was praying or meditating or something. But the Bible was absolutely on his lap. All right, Mike, we're going to go back to you. This is Joel. Was Joel pumping his fist in celebration after throwing the spear at a target?
Ooh, I know that was one of his big moments. As much as Sue wanted to talk about dogging a guy on national TV, I'm going to say yes. And that's only because I recently read his interview with Dalton Ross, where he said like that was the moment he would want to go back to.
Well, that is true. Forever encapsulated on the finale of Survivor. Yes. He was so excited. So happy.
This is shortly before he got painted as a chauvinist.
Yeah, right. Corey, this is for you. All about Gretchen Cordy. Was Gretchen talking and smiling? I'm sorry, that's as specific as I can be.
Did she have her hat on? No, she wasn't talking or smiling.
I'm sorry, she was both talking and smiling. Yes.
Darn it.
I know. I was looking for anything else to distinguish what was happening, and that was literally the best I could do. Mike, this is, what was Greg doing? Was Greg standing in the water with the immunity necklace around his neck?
No, I'm pretty sure he was on the coconut phone.
That is, yes, that is correct. He was on his coconut phone. I tried to find something else that would plausibly work. But no, of course, the thing that everyone remembers the most about Greg is the coconut phone.
Yeah, I can't really think of like any other, maybe like him holding his breath, pulling himself along in the one immunity challenge he run. But like, yeah, that is the one Greg moment of many Greg moments.
I wish someone would bring that back on a newer season.
The coconut phone?
Especially now with like texting is such a big thing. You could text on your coconut
phone. Shane Powers had the wooden BlackBerry, but yeah, we don't have any like, I wonder, maybe Apple put out like a cease and desist.
No, not after season 40 when Jeff was like, you all played before an iPhone.
That's true.
Yes. Oh, I forgot about that gem of a moment.
You played before an Xbox was invented.
Yeah, let's just remember that was like one of the moments to start 2020. Was like, that's how we knew it was going to be a weird year, when Jeff Probst was like, hey, you played Survivor before this thing happened. This major invention came out.
The most used browser when you played Survivor was Netscape. Like, no. All right, Corey, we're going to go back to you. Jenna Lewis, was Jenna crying in her video?
I think she was.
Yeah, she was. What an odd choice from Survivor.
Because I remember her intro shot was also of her crying. It was during, again, that infamous, I can't see my kids, and Richard's not paying attention to that remark, apparently. Like, they use that for the intro. They're using that for this. They are milking this thing for all it's worth. Though I'm not comparing her to a cow, just to be clear, Jenna Lewis.
Talk about character traits. Gervais might agree with you, though.
Gervais.
Okay. Speaking of one, Jervis Peterson, was he, and Mike, this is for you, paddling the boat from that tribe immunity challenge where Pagong beat Toggy?
Ooh. I don't think so. I want to feel like it's some sort of like, because he's very high energy. I want to say it's like him getting off the raft and doing that infamous pose, or like doing some sort of dance.
Okay, so you're going to say false?
Yes.
Okay, so that part was correct. You were wrong with what you thought he was doing. He's getting a hug while wearing sunglasses with the cigar in his mouth because he finds exactly.
But that Gunner was born.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The cigar is still in its wrapper also, which I thought was hilarious.
That also is the same episode where he gets the one taco from Taco Bell via helicopter.
No sour cream.
No sour cream, please.
All right, Corey, we're going to go back to you. Was Colleen rocking back and forth in a hammock?
No.
Oh, false. Is that Ian Terry?
Less squeaking on this version. So that's correct. She was not rocking back and forth in a hammock. She was sticking her tongue out while painted in mud from the mud volcano. Or this is a tight game. So Mike, this one is for you, and then I do have a tiebreaker if necessary. Ooh. Dr. Sean, was Dr. Sean fishing with Super Pole 2000 in his video?
Ooh, so he's got a few choices here, right? He's got the Super Pole, he's got the coconut bowling alley, and he's also got, like, when he saw his dad. But I feel like Super Pole is probably the big ticket item. I'm going to say true.
That's correct. Yeah, it was.
Oh, my God.
Okay, we have a tied score, so...
Oh, no.
I know. So we're going to go to a tiebreaker. I don't entirely know how to do this. So I think what we're going to do is I'm going to have you both describe what you think Sue Hawk is doing in her video. And whomever is closest.
Oh, my God.
Okay. And just to give some context, it's pretty general, generic type of behavior. Okay. So we're not talking anything specific. Like, it's not her doing something I don't know, very wild.
Okay.
Okay. So, okay. Mike, we're going to start with you.
Okay. I'll paint a picture okay, here. Okay.
Thank
words.
You.
This is Sue standing on the beach. There's probably a tree in the background. And she has her sunglasses on. And because I remember she has like weird sort of like, she kind of looks like, what's his name? David Letterman's old band leader, Paul. And
Shoot. He was on The Masked Singer. What's his name?
But anyway, she has those glasses on and her like hat and she's laughing. Like, I feel like it was a joyous memory from Sue, which is really the audience trying to like butter us up before they show us how acrimonious Sue can be.
Okay. And Corey, we'll go over to you. What do you think?
Okay, so there she is, Sue Hawk. I was literally going to say those glasses, too. That's what I pictured first. But she's definitely standing on the beach, but she's got, like, her hands on her hips, like that Superman pose. Like, she's just standing on the beach. That's it. There's one tree behind her.
Okay, there's only one tree. Mike, did you specify the number of trees?
I wanted to say it was one horizontal log. That was sort of like the one that Richard kind of sat on in those first few days.
Okay, let's see. I want to make sure that I get this as precise as possible. So I'm going to go and pull up because you are both very close to what this was. So let's go ahead and see. So I'm looking at her right now. Okay, so there's multiple trees in the background. Ah. So I think, I don't know who gets the point there. Unclear if she's on the beach. So that is definitely not known. She 100% has those glasses.
I knew those were there.
In fact, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and do this. So I would say... I would say she's laughing, I think. So I might have to ultimately give the point to Mike here.
Yeah, go for it.
She's wearing a bathing suit. I don't know if that indicates that she's on the beach.
I mean, Survivor, you wear bathing suits everywhere or your underwear, I guess, in modern Survivor.
Yeah, that's true. None of you commented on the cavities that we could see and her molars.
Oh, no.
But that's OK. That might be a level of detail. Just one too much for this.
Good on her for giving up that $4,369. That would have paid for some crowns.
Yeah. Well, I think ultimately I'm going to have to give the win to Mike here, but this was very close. You both did amazingly well.
And also it's Paul Schaefer.
Yes,
is
Paul
the person
Schaefer.
I'm thinking of. And also, if you look at the picture of him on Wikipedia, he's literally wearing those glasses.
To Paul Schaefer, you know, fashion icons of our time.
Wow.
Kelly's sunglasses were pretty great. I saw in that finale episode as well.
Yeah, I missed those like early 2000s, like whatever the, I don't even know what you would call them. It's like the PC principal sunglasses.
Yeah, the ones with like the elastic in the back. Do you think, and I guess also tie into my question a bit, do you think they should bring Rites of Passage back? Because I know that that's something that a lot of old school fans have been like, they've eliminated the character from Survivor. I'm of a couple of minds of it, because like, I feel like especially in the age of social media, it's not like we're not seeing these contestants again. You have the ability to see them if you want to. But I do wonder if the Borneo method is sort of like a best of both worlds, where like you can have a minute, maybe even 45 seconds of just like a montage of everyone's faces in the lead up to the final immunity challenge, just as a reminder. Of course, also, when you have the Edge of Extinction, literally everyone is on the jury, so you're going to see them anyway.
Well, and it's, I mean, when I think of Rites of Passage, I always feel like in the later seasons when they were still doing it, that it felt so unnecessarily long. And this one went by quickly, but then I also remembered there's a lot less contestants in season one than there are nowadays. Mm-hmm.
I think I would appreciate it, but mainly from the humor perspective, because I want it to be short, but I want to see what is that clip they choose to show for each person. What do they think really encapsulates that person's time on Survivor?
Yeah, and I think there are some occasionally funny moments, like depending on if depending who the person is, like, for example, the infamous Mary in Survivor Micronesia. They approach, they go, I don't really know a lot about Mary. I think there was one where in Palau, Katie just like took Janu's torch and just said nothing and just threw it overboard. Like, there were fun little character moments. Though again, to Corey's point, I think the more time you spend on that, the more time you're going to marinate this, and the less time you're going to have to spend on other stuff. Mm-hmm.
I think one way, if you do want to have some moment dedicated to each of the contestants, is do that quiz that we were talking about. Make them answer a question about each person, and then that'll be their highlight moment. Especially, I appreciated the whose shirt is this or whose jacket is this?
I love that. That it's like a lost and found. Like, who left this behind?
We need to identify the owner of this lost item. Can you please point
out? Yeah, if not, maybe that's how you do it. You're Jeff Probst and you pretend to be like a Walmart speaker and be like, we need the owner of a 1994 Kia Sorento. Who might that be, Richard? Your lights are on. I do want to talk briefly before our last game here about, I mentioned it before, the decision Richard makes to step down from the immunity challenge, because it was done very purposefully. He says, I'd like to make a speech. It's debated as to whether or not that's a speech, especially compared to what Sue does. But it's vocalized later on. You know, Rich admits to Jeff, you know, I feel like, you know, Kelly should take me. Maybe she won't, but I feel like she should. And again, maybe it's the first season, but I'm like, this is a brilliant move. But at the same time, why on God's green earth are you talking out loud about this? So, you know, again, Corey, with, for lack of a better term, the evolution of strategy of it all, what was it like for you to watch this back, especially Richard being so upfront and vocal about how it was a strategic move?
I mean, I honestly remember when watching this the first time 20 years ago and thinking that it was crazy, because I'm like a competitive person and I would never do that. But looking back on it, it's like there really was no other possible outcome. It's like I felt like both people were always going to take him because Kelly was worried about beating Rudy. So I know he said a little bit in the episode that he just didn't think he would beat Kelly in the end, even if it came down to the two of them. So he was kind of saving some time. But I think we all know how prepared for this game Richard was coming into it, and I obviously he had, what was it, 90 minutes before he gave up, that he really was able to sit and think and realize they're both gonna take me because they both think I'm a jerk and they both think I've rubbed some of the jury the wrong way. So I don't know, I thought it was a great move,
and I kind of feel like also the fact that he articulated his strategy right then and there was strategy in and of itself, because to essentially say out loud, well, I think Kelly has to take me because I don't think she'll beat Rudy, also puts that idea and reinforces that idea in Kelly's brain. And so I thought that even though it seems so nonchalant, he's just chit-chatting with Jeff Probst, just sitting on the log, eating his orange slices. But I think that that was calculated. I think that, there was a reason why he went about it that way. Also, like, not just the jumping off, but then also the way that he talked about his strategy afterwards.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that, again, you could bring up a good point that there maybe is a little bit of like mind fuckery in there, right? Of like, especially if Kelly does win and ends up voting him out, like, how is that going to make her look? First off, she's taken the biggest jury threat of the three to the end, but also Rich can say, like, I served you up an opportunity to take me. Why did you not take that up? And what does that say about you? So it really was like a win-win situation for him. And it also, again, really formulated this point too of like, challenge wins don't necessarily matter. I mean, Kelly puts forward an impressive streak, but I mean, we talk about this all the time when it comes to like, should Mike Holloway have run above Carolyn, or the whole, you know, Ben versus Chrissy thing about certain facets of the game being judged in different regards. The fact that Richard knew like this part of the game more so meant like not that winning the challenge would actually be the worst thing, because it meant that he would have to make a decision and actively betray his alliance with Rudy. Here he can have his cake or his orange slice and eat it too.
I think, though, also when you have the majority of the jury members just giving comments and not asking questions, maybe their mind is already made up. So they're not really weighing the pros and cons of, well, Kelly won this many challenges, but Rich was this, you know, knee deep in strategy. So I think it was a little bit more basic than that.
It definitely seemed like they were all over it. Like, even again, going back to like Colleen's little montage moment and her just being like, we're all ready to go back to our homes now.
Yeah, it was actually, it was kind of like they acted a bit like, you know, we were talking some sequester stuff beforehand, but it reminds me of like, remember when in one of the Survivor sequesters, when like Michelle Fitzgerald became the first juror and she's like, I just want to go, like, why do I have to stay here? It kind of seemed like some of the jury members were like, all right, I guess we have to do this. Like, wait, Rudy's not there? Oh, that sucks. All right, well, I guess I'll have to vote for one of them. I guess I'll ask a number.
Like, look, if I vote, will you let us go home?
Right.
I just want my Taco Bell.
Jeff's like, where you're beholden to vote or you don't get on that boat. Vote or vote and you boat.
Yes, I'm sure that was his catchphrase at the time that he was reciting to the contestants.
Like he's workshopping some things, you know? He's calling the torches stacks for some reason. Like, vote and you boat could have been the original spin and grin.
Oh, man. If only, like, there's certain things I wish had continued to permeate. Of course, that line, I'm sure, that he was saying, but also the chest of money was always just such a classic that should have been brought back. So, you know, who knows?
All right, so let's get into our final game here. And of course, this would not be an episode of the B&B without a game from the great Sarah from Sydney, who actually guested on last week's Why Coach Lost podcast with David Bloomberg. So be sure to check that out if you want to put the voice and the name to the game. So
another one of Jeff Probst's slogans, I'm sure.
Oh, exactly. Listen, I have a secret for you. I ghostwrote for him for so long. At a ripe age of 10, I was ghostwriting for Probst in Pulau Tiga, Malaysia. All right. So Sarah writes, the great Rudy Bosch said, quote, her number is up when voting off Sue. So this week, let's get numerical. All sorts of numbers were flying around in this episode. Can you guess the number from the numerology description, or do you need a further clue? So here's how this is going to work. So I am going to give a clue about a number that is pertinent to this episode based on numerology, which for those that don't know, ascribes meaning to numbers. It's like, I don't know. Is it bad to say it's like horoscope for numbers, essentially? Of like,
I
what
think
certain,
that's exactly yeah, it.
What certain numbers mean. So we'll see. If either one of you want to give a guess, if you think you know what it is based on its numerology description. If not, I'll give a further clue, and then you can buzz in and say if you know what the answer is. Obviously, if you get it right, you get a point. If you don't, you get nothing, and we'll give the other person a chance to guess as well. Do you each have individual buzzer sounds that you would like to use?
Yes, of course.
I think I will go with squid ink.
Squid ink? Okay. Okay, Corey?
I was just going to honk.
Also
okay,
acceptable.
You can honk. We can have geese and squid ink.
Yeah, what sounds do squid do? No, kind of like a watery sound. I don't think we want to do that on the podcast.
Watery
sound?
You know.
I mean, my honk is just me saying honk. Does it need to be a noise?
No, it can be whatever you want it to be.
Exactly. Okay. Your goose can make whatever noise you want to. It doesn't even need to honk.
Makes its noise phonetically. Okay, all right, let's do this.
All right, so again, I'm going to read a numerological description for the number. You can guess then. If you don't, wait a few seconds. I'll read a clue.
Is the answer the number?
Yes, the answer will be the number. You know what I will say? If you guess on the numerology clue without the second clue, you get 2 points. If you get
okay, that's fair.
If you have to wait for a clue, you only get 1 point. So there's that. That means that we can give you incentive to try to figure out this stuff.
Okay.
All right, let's start with question number one. This number resonates with optimism.
Wait, oh no. Okay, wait, hold on. Stop down one sec. So this was a number that was like on the episode.
Yep.
And it resonates with optimism also.
Yes.
Gotcha.
I'll give a second clue here since this is the first question. It's the number of pounds that Richard said he lost.
Oh, shoot. Squid ink.
Yes, Liana.
Was it 30 pounds?
That is correct. Richard lost 30 pounds. And apparently 30 is a number that resonates with optimism, which I guess makes sense.
Knew?
If you have weight loss, like, that's great. Good on you.
You're optimistic about your weight loss.
And I guess that's why, I don't know, maybe when people talk about like turning 30, maybe that's unintentionally like looking forward to the future. Like, oh, I'm optimistic about what's to come. I'm in my 30s now.
That also would explain the fortune cookie that I had the other day. It just had the number 30. And I was like, I don't know what this means.
Wait, it just had the number 30?
That was a terrible joke. It's fine. Move on. Next question.
I was like, were you reading the numbers on the back? Like, you flip that over to find the fortune. The lucky numbers are on the back.
Too complicated.
All right, here's the next one. This number is for creatively focused. This number is creatively focused on benefiting groups of people.
What?
This number is creatively focused on, is for creatively focusing on benefiting groups
okay,
of people.
Okay, Squid Ink. Is it yes. three?
It's not three. Or do you have a guess, or would you want to wait for your second clue?
I can guess. Is it 200?
It's not 200. It is 39.
Oh. Ugh. I thought three, because, like, I guess you can have more than three people in a group.
So you thought you can that have only 200 people you can in a group.
So you thought that the most creative group was when three people
yeah, like
in
a
it?
Group of people, because it's a pair of people, it's only two, but a group of people is at least three. And as we
oh, that's a good question.
Right, that's what, exactly.
Are three people a group of people? Because, like, when do you go from, like, few to several to a handful?
Yeah, but we're talking about a group. Does it, can a group have an infinite amount of people, or does it cap at 200?
Why would it cap at 200? Whoa. You're not allowed. This can't be a group anymore if it's 201 people.
I don't know then what would it become. Several handfuls.
So I guess group could be three, right? Because, like, we've had group projects in school where there are three people, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Lots of threes. Or maybe because it's 39, it's like three and then three threes. So it's like three groups of three people. So I think my logic was actually Ooh. Correct.
But yeah. You still got it wrong.
Uh-huh.
All right. Question three. Oh, no. This makes it a group officially. This number is pragmatic and unselfish.
Like the number itself? Or it represents?
Mm-hmm. Well, it represents being pragmatic. Numbers, despite what you might read on fortune cookies, Liana, numbers do not have personalities. I'll give you a second clue. This is the number of pounds that Rudy thought he lost.
I can remember him saying this. Honk.
All right, Corey.
12.
I'm sorry, it's not 12. Liana, do you have a guess?
Was it 18?
I'm sorry. Liana would get it if it was closeness, but it was 22.
22 that he thought he lost. See?
So I guess, yeah, and so 22, I guess, is the most altruistic number. It's about being pragmatic and unselfish.
Hmm.
Oh. I don't know about you, but 20. I'm feeling
yeah, there you
pragmatic
go.
And unselfish.
My God, Taylor put it all in our heads.
That was the working title of the album, I believe.
Pragmatic yeah. and unselfish. All right, here's the next one. This is the number of pursuing goals with diligence. The number of pursuing goals with diligence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is also the number of the episode.
Oh.
Honk.
Corey.
13.
That is correct.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I think 13 is most prominently known for, like, just being a disaster of a number. But apparently it's also about, like, pursuing goals with diligence.
Yeah. Disastrous goals with diligence, perhaps.
Yeah, I guess, like, theoretically, bad goals are still
yeah,
goals.
Yeah, and you can pursue them with diligence.
Like murder is a goal.
Sure.
Not one of mine.
Yeah, I mean, not on my vision board, please. Let's not get it twisted.
Yeah, I like how, so I was going to make a joke also, but I was going to go with, like, a perm, and Mike went with murder for something that's a bad goal, so.
Please, nobody remove this quote directly and, like, put it under a picture of me. Be like, murder is a
murder
goal.
Murder is a goal?
That's going to be my final comrades question, like, has a child said murder is a goal?
Update your Twitter bio.
This is your two truths and a lie.
Yeah, this could be my AMA that I'm going to ask people. Is murder a goal?
Sometimes.
All right. This is the number of infinite potential.
Liana, no, Squid Ink. What was my thing? Honk.
Yes.
Infinity.
Nope, that would make sense, but no, we're going to not count infinity as a number.
Okay, well, fine.
It is also the number of questions at the Final Four Immunity Challenge Tribal Council quiz thing.
honk.
Yes, Corey.
Was it 10?
It's 10.
Ugh.
So yeah, I guess it is weird that 10 is the number of infinite. I don't know, maybe when they were first inventing numbers, they stopped at 10.
They did.
They're like, that's infinite. That's all we can do.
That's all we can go. We can only think so far.
They ran out of fingers.
So,
that's
yes,
true.
It must be infinite.
Infinite potential. Infinite fingers.
They're like, oh, 10 it is. Here we go.
In the future, we'll live in a world with more fingers that will have more numbers. For now, we're stuck at 10.
They hadn't moved to the toes yet.
The big toe, that was quite the accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this is the number of family, home, and nurturing.
Well, I learned my lesson on the last one. I'm gonna wait until the second hint.
It is also the number of hours the castaways say they have left in the game at the beginning of this episode.
Oh no.
Honk.
Yes, Corey.
24?
It is not 24. Liana, do you have a guess?
48?
Again, we give it to you if we were closer, but it is 60. 60.
60. Wait, what does 60 represent?
60 represents family, home, and nurturing.
Oh, I can't wait to be 60.
Then you'll have your family.
Then I'll have a family and a home.
You'll be nurturing.
Yeah, that's what Social Security is about, right?
I think that's
part of the Social Security Act. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's clearly the people up there, they're very into numerology, so they made sure that 60 is rabbit. It makes sense for me because I typically think of 60 Minutes, which I kind of think is an old person show, but that's primarily because of Andy Rooney was on the show for such a long time.
Yeah, and the DVR would always catch his last little monologue before The Amazing Race came on.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Exactly.
I watched so much Andy Rooney before watching The Amazing Race before it went to Fridays.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
All right, this number is determined, intuitive, and confident.
Ooh, a bold number.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is also the number of castaways who started this journey.
Oh, Squid Ink. 16.
Yes, Liana. That is correct. This one by far makes the most amount of sense to me out of any of them. Right? Because it's like sweet 16. Like you feel like you know your place in the world a little bit. You have confidence. You feel a little more intuitive. Like this number makes a lot of sense to me.
You were confident at 16?
I thought I was.
Well, I was.
Good for you. I was not.
I think if it's confidence, it's delusional confidence, though, right?
Like, oh, yeah. Listen, it doesn't say accurate confidence. Yeah. It just says confidence. Yeah, I remember my sweet 16 when I got on the mic and said, thank you all for coming. I finally now believe that murder is a goal. And then they vacated the party.
I'm off to pursue my goals with determination and whatever.
All right, final question here. And this is tight one. This number is self-sufficient. It can coexist with others, but is comfortable alone.
I'll wait for the second clue.
It is the number of the sole survivors this season.
Honk.
Yes, Corey.
One?
That is correct!
I was going to guess one before even the second
clue. I know, it's like, oh, could this be trick? Could this be like 111 or something?
Is this 1,000,000?
But yeah, so surprisingly, they're pretty on the nose with number one, that it's just the one of independence. It doesn't really rely on anybody. It can exist with others, but like it's more of an introvert than an extrovert, mm-hmm. I suppose. So by a score of 3-2, Corey, you are the more expert numerologist. Oh.
Well, I do have my tarot deck here in front of me, so.
You're prepared. Are there numbers associated with the cards?
I mean, yeah, some of them are like Nine of Cups and stuff.
I mean, but
not like numbers. If there are,
they're
I don't
not
know
like number them. Numbers. They're just numbers.
Yes, I see two. Are they? I mean, this is gonna make me sound so ignorant. But tarot cards, are they like playing cards where there's like a Seven of Cups and an Eight of Cups and a Nine of Cups?
Yes.
Okay, so you could get like a straight.
Yeah, but there's also like the Moon and like Death and the Tower. So. You could also lose.
That would be Mike's goal, though. So he like wouldn't understand how the readings go. And he would be like, oh, I did it. That was my goal.
All right. Royal flush.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. All right.
Well, I think I had a much better showing than the last time I was at the B&B. I think I lost every game last time.
And I think actually, like, to bookend this, I believe you came on for the season 40 premiere when we were talking about iPhones and Yule and Jeff Probst and all that. So it really is coming full circle in a number of ways.
Yeah, numerology.
So zero. Squid Ink, zero. Does that...
That's how many I won last time.
Yes, you got that right.
You did. You get 2 points.
And now I'm looking up if zero does have a meaning.
Yeah.
At
all. I mean, that's zero fingers. That's like hard to represent. I guess it's
It's a little bit of infinity as well, right? It's like the beginning and the end. Mm. It's the alpha and the omega.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
The symbol of nothingness and denotes freedom from limitations in this material world.
Oh. Mm.
So like if you've like ascended and achieved nirvana, you were at zero.
Shit.
Yeah, I was just hoping for being 60 and having a home.
And a family.
No, you get the six first and then you truly get the zero, and that's when you truly ascend.
I don't know.
Well, as per usual this summer, we've been trying to highlight causes on the B&B. I know that this past week, Kaylee Strong, who was our guest on the B&B, plugged feedingamerica.org, which is an opportunity for you to be able to find local food banks in your area to donate. During the pandemic, obviously, many, many people have been economically affected and have been without square meals. And Feeding America has done such a great job of being able to deliver meals to thousands of people a week to be able to make sure that they are as well fed as possible during these very difficult times. But Corey, I know I'm putting you a bit on the spot here, but if there's any cause or any charity that you would like to draw eyes to, you could absolutely do so.
You know, I was just going to take a moment to remind everyone to register to vote if you haven't, because you should.
Yes.
And it's very easy to do. So do that.
Yes.
Yeah. I think register by tree mail. Tree mail is so important for Survivor. And, you know, mail is so important now as well, especially, again, if we're in a time where we can't necessarily interact, we can't stand in front of each other and yell at one another, call each other coasters and ninjas. Make sure your vote is heard, even if you're not able to attend tribal council in person.
Yes. Yeah. I think you can just go to vote.gov and there you have it.
Yeah. And if you can register, like they literally fill everything out for you and it's super, super easy to do. So I 100% support that. Please vote.
Do you think eventually you could, with so many jury members, you could like mail in your vote to final tribal council?
I would hope so.
I guess you would have less of the I'm over it attitude because they would be voting from home.
Yeah. Yeah, like if Colleen could have, like she technically voted, so she could vote.
Colleen would have voted from home for sure.
100%. She would have been the first adopter of that.
Or maybe there you could have like super delegates. Like, if you know that, like, Boston Rob and Parvati are going to vote together, Parvati shows up on behalf of him, like, oh, I'm voting on behalf of me and Boston Rob, so you better, like, pitch to me well.
That's the next iteration of Fire Tokens, is superdelegates.
I don't even know.
You bequeath your vote to someone left in the game, and now they get 2 votes.
Oh my God, I'm just trying to think of who I would want to represent me. Like, what if Rudy was your superdelegate? I don't know how that would go.
I don't know what he would do with that.
Tell everyone how dumb he is.
And then just sit back down.
Well, Corey, this was really, really fantastic. Again, it's an interesting bookend to our coverage of Survivor in 2020. So I'm so happy you're able to come on and build upon some successes from last time, to even more this time. You're getting closer to zero in terms of finding enlightenment. Surely for people who wanted to keep up with what you're doing out there, what are you up to and how can people follow you?
I have new podcast episodes every Tuesday with my best friend Tyler. He was the one on The Amazing Race with me. Our podcast is called Psychobabble, and that's mostly what's going on. We're going into our sixth year, so lots of content you can catch up on.
All right. I have to ask, and look, if you're not a Big Brother fan, if you're listening purely for Survivor, feel free to tune out now. But I am so interested. Corey, you were somebody who participated on The Amazing Race season with Nicole, with Rachel Riley, with Janelle.
Yeah.
Give me your reaction to how all the U-turn vote drama made its way into Big Brother 22 somehow.
This is the first season that I've ever watched the live feeds. And it's been so interesting because obviously I know two of the people personally and had met them in real life. And it's like every time I just happened to be on was like I caught them talking about The Amazing Race so many times. And it's I didn't really debrief with a lot of these people after we finished 31. So it's so interesting to hear their like hot takes on things that are so misguided and so off base. Like Janelle and Nicole were saying that the Amazing Race teams all had a 5-way alliance and we were all devastated when Art and JJ got eliminated in the first leg. And I was like, Tyler and I didn't speak two words to Art and JJ. Like, we couldn't have cared less that they were eliminated. And I'm like, and actually, we wanted to work with the Survivor of the Big Brother teams because we knew we had a little bit of an advantage over them, which is it's just so funny to hear their takes on that sort of thing. And and Nicole, I mean, Nicole and Victor had said to us before that they thought that we just wanted a final three with the Amazing Race teams. And that's why we were trying to knock them out in fourth place. But it was truly just because we knew Nicole and Victor were a better team than the Afghanimals going into the finals. Like, it had nothing to do with it being a race alliance versus a Big Brother alliance. I'm like, Nicole and Victor had proven themselves as a great team. Like, we didn't want to race against them because the Afghanimals were very mistake prone in those last few legs. But no, it's been so... I love listening to the drama. I was shocked that Nicole and Janelle are not getting along. But like I said, I hadn't really talked to either of them a whole lot since we filmed the show. So it's just, it's mind boggling to me because to go into the Big Brother house and to actually know somebody or to be there with somebody that you competed with, and they've been just butting heads the whole time, which is just interesting. Very interesting.
And I'm sure to hear everything that's so misrepresented. You're just like, what are you even talking? Stop. Like, I already...
It sounds like when you're like, probably people even listen to this podcast and like we feel like we say something like, oh, this definitely happened. Like, no, it didn't. But like they can't hear you because they're in a different location entirely.
And same thing. Yeah. Nicole said something about Colin called and changed her and Victor's flight reservation. And I'm like, that never happened either. I'm like, what is she talking about?
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, so, I mean, what are your feelings about the fact that like, I mean, you got to experience the U-turn drama. And again, you know, Rachel's not in the house, but like, was it so palpable that you would genuinely expect them to like butt heads via Janelle proxy years later?
I don't know. I really wouldn't. But I mean, I guess and the funny thing is, too, also, it's been interesting to hear Janelle say that she's like mad on behalf of her friend, because like I said, they weren't even there for the U-turn vote. And I feel like there's some more layers there as to what's really going on. But yeah, I mean, I lived that moment and saw that fight and it was great. And Tyler and I had an advantage and nobody even voted for us in the U-turn vote. It was wonderful.
That's amazing.
Oh my God. All right. Well, Liana, I don't think you can offer as much great intel as that, but you've got a lot of other great intel in the form of podcasts. How can people catch up with
what
you're
doing? Follow me on Twitter at Liana RHAP. We're keeping on with the Canada's Drag Race coverage, which Corey was a fabulous guest a couple weeks ago to kick off our isolated coverage of that. We are only a couple episodes away from the finale, so I think it's going to be very interesting. Also, Mike and I, of course, are talking about Big Brother over on the RHAP Big Brother B&B. So we're doing that. I'm doing the live feed updates, all that jazz, just having a lot of fun.
Corey, I know it's, as Leon said, it's been a couple of weeks. Who are you pulling for out of this final four?
For Canada's Drag Race?
Yeah.
I think I'm all in on Jimbo. Jimbo and Bimbo.
Yeah, what did you think about Jimbo and Bimbo from this past week, now that we're just talking about other reality TV shows?
loved it. I was eating it up.
I mean, that's also like par for the course, though. The thesis statement to me of Canada's Drag Race is like, amazing cast, what's going on with the judges? And I think this past episode is like an indicator of that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Jimbo's been kind of like sexy clown the whole time, so for them to be like red for it in a makeover, I was a little confused, but I ate it up. I liked it.
Yeah, it was baffling. Anyway, yeah, we talked about it on the track because it was like, okay, I'm sorry. You say that you want glamour from Jimbo, but you want camp from Jimbo when she's giving you both. And this is such a good makeover. That made no sense to me.
Yeah,
that's fine.
And also Priyanka wore two bowls on their heads and said, "You win this challenge," in matching flapper dresses.
Don't get me started down that rabbit hole.
The ostrich poofs like.
Oh, my God. We're sort of winding down our Survivor coverage. So if you have a reality show that you want to check out, Canada's Drag Race, again, the judging will make you want to kind of rip your hair out, but it's a really, really fun show. So
it's
be sure
so
to
refreshing
it
this season. Like, it just felt so light compared to some of the other. I mean, we're going on almost a year straight of having a drag something to watch every weekend. And I haven't talked highly enough about how Canada has just felt like a breath of fresh air that we needed. Mm.
And you can always follow me at a Mike Bloom type. Of course, aside from the B&B, you can check out the exit press that I do every week for Parade.com. Spoke this past week with Nicole Anthony. Going to be speaking this next week with the next person going out of the house, who may or may not have been on the race with Corey. We shall see. I also got to appear on the Saturday Night Roundtable as well, breaking down everything with the rising and falling, mostly falling, legacies of some of these all-stars. Of course, we're doing Beyond Top Chef. We're doing Tough as Nails coverage with one of Corey's friends, Phil Kogan, as the host and guesting occasionally as well. And then over on Post Show Recap, we're going down the hatch. And I subbed in for Josh Wiggler covering Lovecraft Country and Spider-Man Homecoming. So a lot of stuff to check out. But one of the things you won't be checking out is the Survivor B&B, because for the first time since February, Liana, we are not going to be talking about Survivor. And I will say, like, this was an incredibly, I know we talked about this basically every week, but this was such a fun exercise and such like a great thing to do to commemorate 20 years of Survivor. Like, Winners at War was one thing, but getting to actually go through some of the best episodes in Survivor history, especially one dating back 20 years, was such a cool thing.
This was absolutely refreshing. This was so fun. This almost, with Winners at War as well, reminded me what I love about Survivor and how much I love Survivor, and getting to relive all of these classic moments was just such a blast to go through this process. And I'm so happy that Corey could be here to wrap everything up in the best way possible. And Mike, of course, is always fabulous to go through this journey with you.
Oh, likewise, Liana. And special thanks to not only Corey, but our other guests, Shannon Gus, Akiva Wieneker, Ali Lasher for our ridiculous drinking game 100th episode, Jordan Kalish, Chantel Francis, Kevin McClain, Nigel Broconegra. Thank you all so much. And expect to see more of these people either on other coverage of other reality shows or what's to come. I mean, I would imagine, Liana, that the Survivor B&B specifically will come back once Survivor comes back. I don't think in the cards right now to do another one of these rewatch things, especially with Big Brother going on. So it'll be weird, but this might be the last time we talk U.S. Survivor for quite some time.
Closing our doors, going in for a little rejuvenation, okay? Tighten up those...
Yeah, some cucumber baths. Is that a thing?
Sure, Mike. Anything.
Sounds like a euphemism for something.
Are they cut up or... Because that's... I don't know.
Depends on their religious affiliation.
Sweating like a Mike Bloom in a cucumber bath.
Oh, no! Oh, boy. Please don't put that as a second quote under the picture. Well, that being said, if you all have any game ideas specifically for our Big Brother side of things, please feel free to email us, rhapbnb@gmail.com. Or if you just want to check in and say hi, we have been so thankful to our listeners that have been along in this journey for us, including the great people that have sent in questions, including Sarah from Sydney from this week. And we're always accepting of any and all game ideas that you have. But that's going to do it for our Survivor rewatch. We'll be back TBD. Talk about more island shenanigans, I'm sure. Special thanks to Scott St. Pierre for editing everything behind the scenes, and Wolf from America for his fantastic theme song. Thank you all so much for listening and for following us in this journey through time. For now, we'll check you out at your next stay.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. Better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name.